I've had enough of reading things by neurotic, psychotic, pig-headed politicians. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. No short.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Today I'm going to share with you another part of a panel discussion from the November 2012 9/11 conference in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia, that was sponsored by the Perdana Global Peace Foundation. And Perdana is spelled P-E-R-D-A-N-A, so the Perdana Global Peace Foundation. The conference was called 9/11 Revisited, Seeking the Truth. The panel of speakers you're about to hear had the mission of brainstorming where we go from here. The first panelist you'll hear is architect Richard Gage, founder of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, which, by the way, now has 1,807 architects and engineers signing their petition demanding a new investigation into 9/11 because they say that the official story is scientifically impossible and fraudulent. They have a very informative website at ae911truth.org. It's really worth checking out. And here he is, architect Richard Gage.
The Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth have signed a petition calling upon Congress, the U.S. Congress, for a real investigation. We've taken a lot of heat for this. How can we, after all, obtain a real investigation from those who have either taken part in or had endorsed the original 9/11 Commission report? But the American people will not, as of yet, understand our lack of faith in our democratic institutions in the United States. So we need to take that path and exhaust those resources that our forefathers gave to us in the U.S. in order to be able to hold our elected representatives accountable. So to that end, the question, what kind of a technical investigation will we find acceptable, is a good one, and we, of course, need an unimpeachable investigation, one that includes all of the evidence, not just that which the National Institute of Standards and Technology cherry-picked in their technical building reports. We expect the scientific method to be used relative to all of that evidence, that immunity is offered to bring forth witnesses, and that testimony taken under oath. So these are the prescriptive measures that we'll find acceptable, and I hope that is a beginning to a real investigation.
The next person you'll hear is James Corbett, who produces the online show The Corbett Report. It's well worth checking out. And here he is, James Corbett.
Thank you very much. As the youngest member of this panel by several decades, I feel woefully unqualified to be speaking here today. But if there is any subject on which I am qualified to speak, it would be as a representative of the global alternative media movement, of which I am one small, but not insignificant, I hope, a member. And it occurs to me that, very much in accord with what Professor McQueen and Professor Chasadovsky were saying, it is very important that we understand what type of inquiry or whatever comes out of this we want to set up and who our intended audience is. Because exactly as they've laid out here, I don't think there will be any possibility of setting up any kind of inquiry that would be acceptable to the New York Times or whatever other papers of record might currently exist in the media paradigm. But perhaps this is the most optimistic and empowering message that we've heard so far today. I think we can take an example, for example, a biblical allegory of David versus Goliath. Everyone in this room, not just the people on the podium, but everyone in this room is the David against the Goliath of the mainstream media. But in that story, we can overcome it, even with inferior resources. And I point as one tiny example of this, I see 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, at least 5 cameras hungrily trained on us right now, recording every word that we're saying. But as far as I know, this video has not ever been in the history of this conference or tribunal or what happens in Kuala Lumpur made available to the public, and I don't know if it ever will be. But I myself have a little handheld camera, which probably in and of itself is one-tenth as expensive as any one of these cameras, which I'm going to take back with me to Japan. I'm going to post the video that I managed to capture of today's conference before my batteries ran out on my website or on my YouTube channel. And in a matter of hours, it is going to garner thousands of views, and hopefully, over the lifetime of the video, tens of thousands, or perhaps even hundreds of thousands of views. So to put that into perspective, within a matter of hours, probably 100 times more people will have watched it than have actually attended this conference. Now, this is the power of the alternative global media landscape that we are in, and I posit that it might be something that a lot of people tend to leave out of the equation of the age in which we are living, that literally what you hold in your hand might be the tool with which we delegitimize the system that has been oppressing us. Every single person in this room who has access to an iPhone slave device or whatever your medium of choice is to tweet or Facebook or post or however you connect to social media can help to spread the message of what we're talking about today and to help potentially unlock tens, hundreds, thousands, or even millions of minds. And I say this from the perspective of someone who spent September 11th, 2011, the 10th anniversary of 9/11, in my pajamas, in my living room, making a video which has now been seen by 1.6 million people talking about the truth of 9/11. So I'm not saying this as just something to rally the crowd. I'm saying this quite literally. Every single one of us in the room has the power to change the world. And if we simply start to use that power and stop giving into the system, we can and we will make a difference. Thank you.
And the next speaker is former Georgia Congresswoman Cynthia McKinney.
James is absolutely right. Would that video, James, be the 5-minute? If you have not seen James Corbett's 5-minute 911 truth video, please look it up tonight. Don't let 1 minute pass without you seeing that video, because it captures the absurdity of the official story, and he's so clever in the way that he does it. Now, you see, there's something I'd like to say to Richard, because he's talking about signing a petition to Congress. I'd like to see Richard run for Congress. That's what we need. We need members of Architects and Engineers for 911 Truth inside Congress. We need the members of the 911 Truth organizations or movement around the country, around the United States. We need them running for public office. This is the whole point of how we're going to make change. And it's not that we petition those people, we become those people who are making decisions on our behalf. Maybe just go back to Congress. That'll The other thing that I would like to acknowledge is the fact that we have a community of people across the United States who have given up their professional lives because they've been so moved by what happened on September 11th. I don't know when the last time was Richard drew up an architectural plan. Okay, 4 years. And we have professors, we have young people, we have people who have just decided that they are going to become the leaders that the United States and that this movement needs, and that they are going to become the change that we're all looking for. There's one organization of young people that actually goes out and searches for those people who are complicit in the crimes of 9/11 and the crimes against the people of, well, really, the global community, and they confront them one-on-one, and I'm talking about We Are Change, and they record their confrontation with these people and they ask the tough questions. They give a sense of courage to everyone else to go out and ask these questions, sort of like those questions that I was asking of Rumsfeld. I wouldn't dare try and suggest how this next phase would be structured, but the fact that we are here is significantly important. I have taken such a beating just for asking one simple question. I'm glad that Dr. Mahathir has decided that he has the courage and the willingness and the readiness to dedicate his reputation to this issue. Everyone in this room has been affected. There are some legal structures inside the United States that could be activated. So we had a meeting, as is clear now, last night, and I mentioned some of those legal structures that would provide the force of the state to have, so that in an inquiry or after the inquiry in the legal stage, then these findings are presented with the force of subpoena power and penalty of perjury. This is the kind of thing that hasn't taken place. And we have so many people in the United States who are 911 truthers, the truthers. We have people who know viscerally that the government story isn't right, but they don't know what is right. And so this provides a tremendous opportunity for all of us to educate a community, I believe, that is ready to hear our message. They weren't ready in 2001 or 2002 or 2003, but I believe that we have literally hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of Americans who are ready to hear this message. And so what I would also just caution us to do is to make sure that we connect with that. There is an international 911 truth movement, but fundamentally we have business that needs to be taken care of inside the United States. And we have a vibrant 911 truth movement that's just looking for something to grab onto. Kuala Lumpur can provide the U.S. 911 truth movement something to grab onto, and hopefully we can change Washington, D.C. so that we can change the world. Thank you.
The next person you'll hear is the MC for the day, and I don't know his name.
Thank you very much to the panel. And now perhaps we can open the floor to participants to provide some input. Let's not forget that a mother's love for her child's voice and posting it on YouTube created phenomena like Justin Bieber, for example. And a guy in our Asian context making some funny hand movements, which were difficult to understand, created the Gangnam viral. So there is an ability to be able to reach out beyond what we can sometimes expect. So perhaps the youth, the young people, can make some contribution and suggest what are the kind of methods we can pursue in the next couple of minutes. So any speakers want to give their viewpoints?
The next speaker is Dr. Mohamed Mahathir, a former president of Malaysia and one of the organizers of this 9/11 Truth Conference.
Thank you. I've been listening to all the views, the reports, and the suggestions as to what we should do after this. I agree that we should have a commission. I have no problem with that. But I would like to draw attention to a power that is much greater than all the governments of Europe and America. And the power is the power of the people. They decide who should rule the country. Now, we have some experience, of course, of the way democracy works. When people are divided, or divided equally, a small group can actually determine who would win. Now, I had this experience during the course of my political career. I was contesting in a constituency where the indigenous people make up the majority with a small minority of non-indigenous people. Now, the indigenous people are divided exactly into two, 50-50. And it is the minority which decided who should win. and I lost because the minority didn't quite like me. Now look at the United States. One always wonders, why is it that the United States is so slavish in following instruction coming from Tel Aviv? I mean, Tel Aviv is a small country, and the number of Jews in America is only about 10 million. And yet, even if Tel Aviv commits a crime, like driving a tractor over an American girl, United States still supports Tel Aviv, does not support the American girl. The reason is that there are 10 million Jewish people in the United States, but the United States people are divided into two. The Gentiles are divided into two, Republican and Democrats. They almost get the same number of votes. And it is this small group of Jews working together with control over the media, control over the finances, control over Hollywood. They are the people who actually throw their votes for the candidate who appears to be supporting Israel most. So the people who are contesting in America are afraid of this small group of people. And Cynthia will tell you that you have to make a pledge to support Israel or you will lose, and you lost. There are other people who refuse, who wrote a book, I forgot what his name was, but this man,
Paul Findley, F-I-N-D-L-E-Y, is the name of this former congressman.
He wrote a book to expose the lobby, the Israeli lobby, the IPAC. And he lost. After winning for four times, but the fifth time for writing that book, he lost. Why? It's because he wrote something against the Jews and his lobby. So this small group of people became powerful because the bigger group are actually divided between Republicans and the Democrats. And because of that, candidates become frightened of the Jewish lobby, and they invariably pledge to support Israel or else they would lose. Now, I think we can play the same role as the small Jewish lobby. What we need to do is to convince enough Americans and European voters, not the whole lot of them, not even the majority of them, just enough European and American voters about the lies that they have been made to believe, the lies about 9/11. And it's not so difficult to convince people. I'm quite sure that many who came, who attended this session, came with doubts. But after hearing, I think most of the doubts have disappeared. Because now they know that people are talking not about suspicions or theories or anything, but about facts. And because of that, people are convinced. I'm quite sure that we can convince enough Americans, especially young Americans, enough Europeans, so that they can voice their dislike for people who insist that there should be no commission of inquiry on 9/11. Or better still, that they should say that they do not believe in what the official report was saying. Now, if we can get them to come across and force the candidates in elections that they should not believe in what happened on 9/11 as reported by the official media, then I think we would have made tremendous progress. And today, although we cannot control the media, I mean, they are very unfriendly, as Professor Chosudovsky said just now, they are very unfriendly, but some are friendly, I must admit. We have this alternative media, and the alternative media reaches more people than the print media or even the TV. You mentioned just now about this Gangnam dance by a person from Korea whose name is P-S-Y. I don't know how do you pronounce that? Psy. In one day, he managed to get about 1 million hits, I think, because of his dance. So the alternative media is a very powerful media. And we have enough people who can talk convincingly, who can write convincingly about what happened, what really happened on 9/11. There will be sufficient number of people who initially would question themselves whether what they believed before was true or not, and who might eventually be convinced. Now, these people are voters in Europe and in America, and if we can get sufficient number of them to overturn the votes by giving their votes to the people, the candidates who do not pledge to support Israel, or better still, who say they are not convinced as to the report made by the government, and that there should be a new inquiry by neutral people, I think that would be another approach. I'm not saying that the commission shouldn't go on. It should go on. It might even contribute towards convincing enough people so that the candidates in elections in Europe and in America will know the power of this small group of people. And if they don't question the veracity of the reports, then they are going to lose. This is the only language that politicians understand. I'm a politician and I understand. And these are the politicians who eventually will end up heading governments. And if we can elect governments who question the 9/11 story, then I think we have made tremendous progress. I thank you.
And here's a member of the audience.
First of all, I would like to mention it's a great honor and pleasure to see Dr. Mahathir in person today. I am Professor Suleiman from Pakistan, and I would like to carry forward from what Professor Chusadovsky mentioned. The setting up another commission for the truth finding in terms of 9/11 calls for, I think, I would suggest, another action. If we fast forward 9/11 into the aftermath of 9/11, and I think this is an action which also need to be included within what this commission should be doing. We fast forward, and what are the after, or what's the aftermath? What happened after that? First of all, for example, and this commission should be having an investigation in 360 degrees rather than 180 degrees, not what happened and why happened, and that's all. The immediate effect after that, the scope of inquiry of such a commission should see, first of all, what was the first effect? U.S. declaration of war on terror. The first effect. And immediately after that, we see marking certain countries for attack. Iraq, Afghanistan, these are the casualties that we see. I come from a country which is a silent casualty, I would say. In the last 11 years, I have seen my country, Pakistan, going from where to where. And we stand nowhere among the casualties. Libya, we can see. Egypt, we can see. Syria, we can see. Egypt, Afghanistan, we can see. Iraq, we can see. But we have, in the name of de-Talibanization, what we have suffered is basically what comes as the effect of what happened on 9/11. So I think America has achieved, or the U.S. has achieved what it had to achieve. It has already been done. The countries it wanted to destroy are already destroyed. The first Islamic nuclear power, Pakistan, the nuclear program rolled back. The next Iran, or whatever it is, it's there. So the point that any contribution which the next commission would be able to make, that is yet to see, of course, for the generations to come, for the centuries to come, there must be a commission so that, as Dr. Mahathir has pointed out, that this is the language that the politicians understand. And for their understanding, these commissions would be useful. But it would be important to include, and this commission would not serve any purpose if such an action is not included within the jurisdiction or within the prospects within which this commission should be acting, if the aftermath or the after effects as a direct result of 9/11 are not recorded. It's very much there. The power of the alternative media, of course, we all know. But at the same time, as already mentioned, that the streamlined media also needs to be targeted. Okay, that will all be done, but that would be incomplete if the Commission is unable to include what American statements, direct statements, have been as a result of war on terror. Thank you very much.
This is former Congresswoman from Georgia, Cynthia McKinney.
May I respond to the gentleman from Pakistan? I would just like to say that you're absolutely right, and Pakistan has been one of the most mistreated of the so-called U.S. allies. I'll be in Pakistan next week to plead for the release of Dr. Afia Siddiqui, who is one of the most, in fact, for our Iraq war tribunal with Moazzam Begg, when he heard the cries and the screams of a woman prisoner who was imprisoned near his cell or cage, he suspected that it was Dr. Afia Siddiqui. The crimes that have been committed against peoples and whole countries in the name of this war on terror, the crimes that have been committed by people who purport to represent me and spend my tax dollars is unspeakable, and it's unacceptable. And I am so appreciative of the words of Dr. Mahathir, because it is now time, I believe, that people in the United States, I have worked for a very long time to cross that Republican divide, black, white, people of color, all of these divisions that we're supposed to have in the United States that divide us. And something has happened, and I believe that with the proper spark, we can achieve a critical mass of people who are willing to say, I'm not going to vote for war anymore. I'm going to vote for a candidate who will not vote for war. I will vote for a candidate who will tell me the truth about what happened on September 11th. I think we've reached that point with just a little push, with just a little opportunity for more information to see that there's a community out there, a larger community out there to which they can attach themselves. I believe we will be able to see some changes. But particularly now in the U.S. Congress, I don't know if my words sank into you, but 535 members of Congress voted to support Operation Pillar of Cloud just 2 or 3 days ago. Unanimous in the House, unanimous in the Senate. And there is no greater divide than between the people who are outraged at this way that their tax dollars are being spent and the elected representatives, those with positional authority, who supposedly represent the interests of these people. Ron Paul was able to garner that angry white man voter, and Ron Paul will be out of the Congress when the next Congress is sworn in. Dennis Kucinich was able to garner the progressive voter, and he'll be out of the Congress when the next Congress is sworn in. That's how you get 535 unanimous vote for something as abhorrent as what is happening now in Gaza. That's how it happens. All we need is one success story to turn it around. That's all we need, is one success story to provide a little hope for people. So anyway, I'm sure that if we proceed in any kind of way, it'll be more than anything we had thus far. And that will be, I believe, the hope that we need to re-energize a latent movement that's out there just waiting for somebody to say, okay, here's the way, here's a hand.
And again, you were just listening to a panel discussion at the November 2012 9/11 conference in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia. This concludes this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Thanks for listening.